Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+, simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
President Obama believes that women should make personal health care decisions for themselves rather than their bosses deciding for them. Today's decision jeopardizes the health of women who are employed by these companies.
On this July 4th, when we all celebrate with the fireworks going off, we will be celebrating a continuation of freedom of conscience in this country.
That's White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest and Charmaine Yost, who's a regular guest on this program. She's president of Americans United for Life, reacting to Monday's Supreme Court decision on the Health and Human Services contraception mandate, the Hobby Lobby case. It came as a surprise to some. I wonder what would be the ramifications if the decision had gone 5-4 the other direction. Welcome back to Issues Etc. live this Thursday afternoon. It's the 3rd of July. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be giving away a copy of the book, It's Okay to Say God to the Listener, with the best question or comment in this hour as we discuss, from a legal perspective, the Supreme Court's ruling on the Health and Human Services contraception mandate. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-IE. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at issuesetc, or go to our Facebook fan page. We've left space there for you to leave your question or comment for our guest, Tad Armstrong, on the HHS mandate case of the Supreme Court on Monday. Facebook.com/issuesetc, facebook.com/issuesetc. Tad Armstrong is an attorney in Edwardsville, Illinois, and he's founder of ELL Constitution Clubs. He's a contributor to the documentary The Intersection of Church and State, and he's author of this book, It's Okay to Say God, Prelude to a Constitutional Renaissance. Tad, welcome to Issues Etc.
I'm so glad to be here.
What would have been the ramifications had the Supreme Court gone 5-4 the other direction against Hobby Lobby's claim in this case?
Let me say, Todd, the first thing is I wasn't surprised at the outcome. I had predicted the outcome. The only dismay I have over it is that it wasn't a greater than 5-4 outcome. I was hoping for 6-3. I even thought it might be unanimous, believe it or not. I don't see how there's any other way to interpret the statute involved than the way they did. If it had gone the other way, let me put it this way. I ask my students in my Constitution clubs, where do our freedoms come from? And an unknowledgeable answer will typically want to go straight to the First Amendment. If you go to the First Amendment, you will find that it states Congress shall not prohibit the free exercise of religion. And it deals in a manner with the rest of the freedoms, that government shall not prohibit those freedoms. That's not a grant of freedom. It's a statement that they shall not be prohibited. So where do they come from? They come from the Declaration of Independence. This is the only nation in the world, to my knowledge, that acknowledges our freedoms come from our Creator. So you ask me, how would it have been if it had gone the other direction? And with a straight face, I can tell you that, in my opinion, it would have been the end of America, nothing less. The bedrock of America is the freedom of religion. It's the first freedom mentioned in the First Amendment. It is what we were founded upon. So that would be my answer to that question.
So America as we know it, is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. And as we know it defines it all, does it not? I mean, I suppose we could transform it to something that it was never intended to be. But that would have been an outcome of this. There's so much ignorance and misinformation about this case that it's really frightening.
Is that how – I want to get to the misinformation about the case in a second. But is that how the Supreme Court actually looked at this? Did they look at this particularly in terms of the religious liberty that is acknowledged, not granted, I agree with you, but acknowledged and recognized in the First Amendment?
Well, you asked me what my reaction would be if it had gone the other way, and I gave you a broad global answer. Technically speaking, one of the misconceptions here is that the Supreme Court interpreted religious freedom of the First Amendment. They did not.
Okay.
This was not a constitutional question that they addressed. It was purely an interpretation of a congressional act called the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. So it really literally was not a ruling on the freedom of religion as we find it in the First Amendment.
So is it safe to say, kind of walking into some misconceptions, is it safe to say that the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court declared the HHS mandate unconstitutional? Is it safe to say that?
With respect to closely held family corporations. Yes.
Okay. Is it that narrow?
Well, no, it's not safe to say that. I'm sorry. Let me back up. That's not technically correct. They did not find it unconstitutional. In fact, they specifically said, Justice Alito in his opinion, specifically said, we don't need to reach the constitutional question. What they held was that government's attempt to enforce this mandate is a violation of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. There's a big difference between that and dealing with a constitutional question.
So the court actually consciously, at least the majority, consciously said, we are not going to push this to the First Amendment.
No, and that's what exactly. Mm-hmm. They have a standard policy that they normally go by where they don't reach constitutional questions if that is unnecessary to arrive at a judgment. And they did not hear, and it specifically states they did not need to do that. Now, if they had gone against Hobby Lobby on the interpretation of the statute I referenced, then they would have had to go to the First Amendment and determine if that would have affected the outcome.
What are some other misconceptions about the Hobby Lobby case that you've observed over its when it was brought, how it was presented in the press, how the decision has been presented?
Yeah, I think the single greatest misconception that the left wants to continue is that this has anything to do with contraception. It does not. The Hobby Lobby family, the Greens, only objected to four of a list of 20 drugs approved by the FDA that, in their opinion, and contrary to their religious beliefs, terminate an embryo after fertilization. The other 16 they do not object to and, in fact, are perfectly willing to supply. So the greatest misconception is calling this ruling against the idea of contraception. That's just not true. The second one I think I've already alluded to. And, in fact, Rush Limbaugh, the day that this came out, he said it was a great victory for First Amendment religious freedom, and not to beat a dead horse, but it doesn't have anything to do with that. And I think the third single greatest misconception is that this will have any impact on women whatsoever. Let's keep in mind that, after all, and I asked this question, you know, the people that are upset about this ruling, you can see steam coming out of their ears. They're so upset about it. And I would ask them this question. Are they angry at President Obama? They would say, well, of course not. And I would respond to them this way. President Obama exempted grandfathered policies from this mandate. He exempted companies with fewer than 50 employees. He exempted churches. He exempted religious not-for-profit corporations. Why aren't they upset with that if they're upset with this ruling? Because none of those employers have to meet this mandate.
I got to ask, though, so why is the White House, at least we heard from its spokesman there in the open, saying this is going to hurt women?
Well, because the White House doesn't care about the truth. Listen, let's not forget something. If you'll recall back when the president was trying to get the Affordable Care Act passed, one of the things he did at the very end, he thought he must have to do to get Congress to go along with him, is he took out his pen, his famous pen, and he wrote an executive order that this law would not impose abortion on anyone. And he lied. He lied. This is what this did. And the irony of this is, if you go back, you know, you might be asking the question, if we have First Amendment free exercise of religion, why on earth would we need a Religious Freedom Restoration Act?
I was wondering that, too.
Well, yeah. And here's the irony of this. In 1990, in a case involving Native Indians who smoked peyote against the criminal laws, I believe, of Oregon, during a religious ritual, were terminated for that reason. By the way, the irony all over the place. These people were employed by a drug rehabilitation company. Okay. They were terminated for that, and then they applied for unemployment benefits and were denied, and took it all the way to the Supreme Court. And Justice Scalia reeled in a bit of religious freedom when he said that laws that are generally applicable, that is, that don't target religion, do not need to meet the standards of strict scrutiny like they had in the past. And all they need to do is have a rational basis. Congress didn't like that. They believed that there could well be statutes and laws of general applicability that would seriously impose upon the freedom of religion of our citizens. And so they adopted and passed overwhelmingly the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which took us back to the pre-peyote case and made it more difficult then for government to impose upon religious freedom. And it went beyond that, actually, I can get to in a minute. Mm-hmm. The exceptional irony of this is that Chuck Schumer was one of the co-sponsors of this act, and Bill Clinton signed it into law. Now, I'm not a politically correct guy, okay? I think it's a waste of time. So let me just get to this. People like Clinton and Schumer and those ilk, these are the people that want to take guns away from peace-loving American citizens that are so, so angry that this Supreme Court has said government cannot effectively make a Family Hill corporation with religious beliefs provide a gun to their employees to kill their babies. Now, that's just it. Up front, right down the middle. That's what it is. And it's contra, you know, I mean, just how can you believe that? How can you believe that?
We're talking with Tad Armstrong. I like the way this guy thinks. we're talking about the Supreme Court ruling on the Health and Human Services contraception mandate on this Thursday afternoon, July the 3rd. When we come back, we're going to spend the rest of the hour with him. Now, if you'd like to get into the conversation, you are welcome to do so. Give us a call, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us that email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or go to our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues, Etc. 300. Gloria Christi Lutheran, Greeley, Colorado. St. John's Lutheran, Rosemount, Minnesota. Trinity Lutheran, Waltham, Minnesota. Trinity Lutheran, Fredericktown, Missouri, Zion Lutheran, Gravelton, Missouri, Christ the King Lutheran, Billings, Montana, Redeemer Lutheran, Nashville, Tennessee, and Zion Lutheran, Douglas, Wyoming. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues, etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues, etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues, etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues, etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Spending this hour on this Thursday afternoon, July the 3rd, talking with Tad Armstrong, author of the book It's Okay to Say God, Prelude to a Constitutional Renaissance, about the Supreme Court's ruling on the Health and Human Services contraception mandate. Now, you said that the law that they were that was in view for the Supreme Court here was, it's usually called RFRA, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act that you've referenced several times here. Describe this law to us. You told us how we got it and the circumstances of how we got it. What does it actually say?
I'm going to give you word for word.
Okay.
It's not very long. RFRA prohibits the government from substantially burdening a person's exercise of religion, even if the burden results from a rule of general applicability, unless the government demonstrates that application of the burden to the person is in furtherance of a compelling government interest and is the least restrictive means of furthering that compelling government interest. So one of the attacks upon this result is that this law does not apply to corporations, just to persons. This was one of the easiest things Justice Alito addressed. The rule of law is that when you have a term of art in a statute, the first thing you do is look to how it is defined in the statute. RFRA does not define person in the statute.
What does that mean then?
Well, there's another law called the Dictionary Act. When the term is not defined in the statute you're interpreting, the next direction is to the Dictionary Act, also passed by Congress. And if you go to that definition, person includes corporations.
So he didn't have to go any farther than the dictionary. Alito didn't have to go any farther
than the Dictionary Act, which defines persons to include corporations. And here's another irony. It can't possibly be that the corporate structure is the issue, and that's what Justice Alito held, because after all, President Obama has exempted churches and other religious not-for-profit corporations. Not-for-profit corporations. The government does not deny that individual business owners and partners and non-corporate held businesses have these the freedoms described in RFRA. They don't deny that. They also don't deny, apparently, that not-for-profit corporations don't have these freedoms because they exempted them from this mandate. Well, so what's different between a not-for-profit corporation and a family-held for-profit corporation? You would say profit. I'm going to laugh at that just a little bit because the biggest myth in all of this is that a not-for-profit corporation doesn't care about profit. I mean, I've never seen a not-for-profit corporation that raises their funds through contributions get near the end of the year and hold up their hand and shout, "Oh, don't give us any more money. We might actually make some."
Yeah, we don't do that here.
It's ridiculous, yeah. Okay? So what is but then they would say that if you're in business for profit, somehow your religious principles are out the door. And Justice Alito says, "I don't know where you get that. Look, corporations cannot act without people. Don't we look to corporations to be, quote, good corporate citizens?"
Google says do no evil.
Oh, yeah. And help with the public zoo and the library and museum. Sure, we ask them to contribute. Well, how can you be good if you're a corporation under that theory? Of course you can be good and you can have religious beliefs and you can act upon them. And that's what the court has held.
Okay. So in other words, the court, the majority of the court said, look, HHS mandate. That's general applicability. That falls into the category here that we have in RFRA, general applicability of this law.
In other words, it doesn't specifically, in its wording, target religion, and that's true.
Okay, and then they say, how did they address the issue of compelling governmental interest?
Well, I guess the first issue is whether or not this mandate that has exorbitant fines if you don't supply the coverage, is that a substantial burden to, in this case, Hobby Lobby's family? Well, of course it is. I mean, if you're asked to either violate your own religious principles or pay fines that will do you in, that's a pretty substantial burden. So that's the first step.
Okay.
The second step is, does the government have a compelling government interest in seeing that this mandate is enforced? The court did not answer that question. Justice Alito said, we will assume that it does. So they specifically didn't address the issue. They said, we'll just assume it does. Then the next step is whether or not they have used the least restrictive means to further that compelling interest. And that was pretty easy for them as well. Because here's their answer, and this is why I say this doesn't have any effect on employees of Hobby Lobby. Here's the answer. President Obama, when he exempted fewer than 50, when he exempted employees of religious not-for-profit corporations and churches, he also demanded that insurance companies supply this without charge. I'm not sure how he did that. I've got a constitutional issue with that myself. That's another program. But he did. And what he said was to those insurance companies is, look, you're not going to lose money on this. The money you save by providing these four abortive fashions is going to be more than outdo what you would have made by actually selling it. So if he can do that for those, and it doesn't cost them anything, it's all he has to do is get that pen out. That's all he has to do. And nobody will be affected by this except those that have religious principles will not be required to provide on their own the gun to kill babies. And that's just the truth.
Okay. Couple questions here. Did the president essentially lay the groundwork himself for the, it sounds like he did. He laid the groundwork for this decision himself by making those exemptions. Well, if he wanted to, could he have said, or could they have said, look, no exceptions, and then they could go into court saying, we haven't recognized any of these people as exceptions. Did he weaken his future case by making those exceptions?
Okay, I mean, let's be absolutely, totally correct here. Let's say that I keep talking in terms of Obama. Actually, the HHS secretary is the one that mm-hmm. adopted these regulations. I contend they went way beyond the congressional authority to do that. And in fact, when Justice Kennedy was asking questions at oral argument on this case, he alluded to the fact that how on earth does an administrative agency adopt something so sweeping into law? And I agree with him. He didn't mention that in his concurring opinion, but that was kind of the idea. So I guess we should say technically President Obama did not literally define these terms. Do you doubt that he had his hand on this? Not me. I don't doubt it for an instant.
So in answer to the question, did he weaken his own future case with the court by granting those exceptions?
Well, I mean, the court would have come out the same way. I mean, certainly religious not-for-profits would have found the same victory that Hobby Lobby did. They would have just had to fight for it instead of being given to them.
So and he handed the opposition a little help here in advance. By doing that.
I mean, let me say it this way. I've never known a president in my lifetime, and I'm only 110 years old at this point. I've never known a president this divisive in the history of America, and certainly in my lifetime. I've never known a president to support a law that was designed to divide believers from others in the land of the free. And that is exactly what this did. So I don't know. It's my personal belief. I don't think he's upset about this outcome. He'll use it to try to gain votes.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the minority opinion. There are four votes there, but the minority opinion was written by Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. What was said there, and what's your reaction to what was said there?
Well, you know, I haven't spent a lot of time on it because I really the most that I care to know about it, quite honestly, is mentioned in the majority opinion. Justice Alito corrected, and so did Kennedy in his concurring opinion. Justice Ginsburg was hysterical in her dissent. I mean, she's got all kinds of predictions that the world's going to come to an end about people making these religious claims all over the place now. And it's just not likely to happen. And she attacked the Family Health Corporation being a person. Well, she attacked all the things we discussed. She suggests that a company like Exxon may come along and do something like this. And the court said that's just not likely to happen. A major publicly traded corporation is just not likely going to address religious issues. And technically, I suppose, that would be an issue for another day, although I believe Justice Alito was pretty careful to limit this outcome to family-held corporations.
When we come back, we're going to spend some more time talking about the Supreme Court's ruling on the Health and Human Services contraception mandate. Tad Armstrong is our guest. He's an attorney in Edwardsville, Illinois, and he's authored the book, It's Okay to Say God, Prelude to a Constitutional Renaissance. We're giving away a copy of this book to the listener with the best question or comment, and this break is a great time to give us a call, send us an email, or go to our Facebook fan page with a question or a comment on the HHS mandate case before the Supreme Court and decided on Monday. 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, talkback at issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at IssuesETC or our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/IssuesETC, facebook.com/IssuesETC.
There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
The Lord has gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. These gifts can be received every week at both Grace Lutheran Church and Trinity Lutheran Church in Wichita, Kansas. Join us for divine services at Grace on Sundays at 8 a.m. and 4:30 p.m., as well as every Wednesday at 11 a.m., or at Trinity every Sunday at 11 a.m. Grace is located at 3310 East Pawnee and Trinity at 611 South Erie. Gather with us around our Lord and His giving His gifts to us. See you soon.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+, simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
Do you wish your Lutheran school offered Latin, Greek, or logic? What about German or calculus? Right now, local Lutheran schools in two different states are utilizing Wittenberg Academy to expand their course offerings. Whether it's Latin for third graders or logic for seniors in high school, Wittenberg Academy can help. For your homeschooler, or for your brick-and-mortar Lutheran school, we have solutions. To find out more, visit wittenbergacademy.org.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
No matter the size, big or small, RP Lumber can deliver it all. From pickups to one tons to box trucks and booms. Everywhere you look, you see blue. RP Blue. RP prides itself in customer service. RP will deliver quality products to your home, business, or job site. And you can be sure of timely delivery on clean trucks with courteous drivers. So when you think of service, think blue. RP Blue. With over 50 local community locations, for 37 years, RP Lumber.
Did you know that during the month of July, you can receive 7 Arch books for children on the best loved parables of Jesus for less than $10? Find out more about this 7-book series, The Best Loved Parables of Jesus, for children ages 5 through 9 at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. The Best Loved Parables of Jesus, The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for July.
It is endlessly frustrating for women that decisions about their health care are being made by people who never need to use birth control, and it is no coincidence that all 3 women on the court signed today's dissent.
Religious people will no longer be forced to choose a false dichotomy between their faith and the government.
The voices of Cecile Richards, president of Planned Parenthood Action Fund, responding negatively to the Hobby Lobby case sent down by the court on Monday this week. Mallory Quigley, also of the Susan B. Anthony list, with her reaction as well. We're discussing the Supreme Court's ruling on the Health and Human Services contraception mandate. Tad Armstrong is our guest, an attorney in Edwardsville, Illinois, and author of the book, It's Okay to Say God, Prelude to a Constitutional Renaissance. One of the questions that's being raised kind of in response to this decision is, say, well, what if there's a Muslim family-owned company, and they want to, according to their beliefs in Sharia, they want to impose, say, some of Sharia's penalties on employees who are caught embezzling or stealing. So embezzlement will get your arm chopped off. Stealing pencils from the office will get your hand chopped off. And what's to stop them from doing that in the name of religious freedom?
The employer is going to chop that hand off?
Yeah, I guess
without a trial, without a jury, I guess that's what they would want. Look, yeah, it's ludicrous. I heard some people calling Rush the other day, seriously suggesting that this will have unintended consequences, and that was one of the examples they used. Look, I would advise everybody that, contrary to what you may believe, bring a little common sense to the law, because in most instances, there is common sense to it. Gosh, there's so many reasons why that's ridiculous. We have a Bill of Rights. We have a right to a jury trial. We have the Eighth Amendment that prohibits cruel and unusual punishment. We also have crimes against chopping people's hands off. That is just ridiculous to suggest that that's even in the realm of possibility.
And does it also raise this kind of specter of ridiculous moral equivalency that somehow telling a woman that she has to pay for her own birth control or for her own abortifacient, we should say, is the equivalent of chopping her hand
off? Of course. And after all, you know, the Hobby Lobby is not saying they would fire people that dared used one of these 4 abortifacients. That's not what they're saying. In fact, prior to this ruling, if anyone was discriminated against, it was them. There has never been a constitutional right to free stuff. Not ever. I don't know why all of a sudden people are demanding that the right to free stuff should trump the Constitution. And in this instance, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. It's absurd.
An example I brought up off mic, another one just for your reaction. I want to claim that I have a religion that requires me to drive 100 miles an hour on the freeway. Mm-hmm. I cannot drive less than 100 miles an hour. It is my personally held religious belief. So you're saying that the speed limit, that 75 mile an hour speed limit in some states, that's an impingement upon my religious freedom. Mm-hmm. Someone raises that to you. What's your response?
Well, my response is, first of all, we have a threshold question of whether or not it is a religious belief. Now, the Supreme Court has indicated time and time again they're not going to get into whether they don't have to believe that the person's belief is religious. They want to stay away from government making that choice. But there are limits to everything. And this judiciary, this government, is never going to recognize the church of non-taxpayers, people that say legitimately, we'll assume, that they don't believe they should contribute $1 to secular government. That's not going to fly. Neither would those that believe in human sacrifice. Not going to happen. In your instance, we don't even have to go that far. It's pretty simple. The government's speed limit on the highway certainly is a compelling interest, and there is no less restrictive means possible than imposing a speed limit. That's the only legal way to get people to slow down. I mean, it's just you can go down anything you want to try out. We can go down the rules, and you're going to find that those extreme examples would not fly.
Dave listens in Troy, Michigan. He has this to say. He says, in future Religious Freedom Restoration Act cases, should there be any chance of picking up the vote of one of the four dissenting justices?
No. No. Well, any is a stretch. I mean, I shouldn't be so quick to answer that. They will go through this process of interpreting those elements of this statute. So is there any chance not of changing this mandate? There's not, in my estimation, of the existing court. It is a bit frightening, though, that it wasn't greater than 5-4. And if there's a change on the court in its makeup, we're at risk. Yeah, of course we're at risk. That's why electing the president's a pretty important thing.
Here's I saw this on social media, Ted.
Can I say this? Absolutely. Todd. It's fascinating that we get the first calls from Troy, Michigan. We have an ELL Constitution Club in Troy, Michigan.
Oh, good.
Kelly Kincaid's our moderator up there. That's amazing.
I saw this on social media, just one of these memes that floats around. And it said, it had a picture of a sonogram with the label person underneath it. It had a picture of Hobby Lobby's storefront labeled person underneath it. Then it had a picture of a woman, and it said non-person. That was one person's reaction to the Hobby Lobby case here and the Supreme Court's decision.
Non-person. This doesn't affect women. We've covered that, I think. Women still have the ability to get these things for free. And if there's any chance they don't, all the president needs to do is sign the same law he signed for religious not-for-profits. Just sign it. It's the same effect. He won't do that if he wants to maintain the divisive state of things. And it's irony. Sonogram, the left wouldn't recognize the fetus as a person. The Supreme Court has not recognized the fetus as a person. So that picture is not correct.
I'm wondering about this. The decision here seems to have highlighted not just the decision itself, but everything leading up to the decision. It seemed to highlight two different definitions of religious liberty. Granted, the court was not addressing religious liberty per se in this. It was doing Religious Liberty Restoration Act, mm-hmm. as you explained before. Mm-hmm. But the two different definitions that seem to be in play here is, look, you can believe and you can worship mm-hmm. however you want. And sometimes we even hear that term, mm-hmm. freedom of worship, mm-hmm. As opposed to what seems to be the far more traditional religious liberty, that is freedom of thought, of action. The government can't impose any restrictions there. There seems to be a definition of religious liberty that wants to push religious liberty into the house of worship, into the time of worship, and say, you can do whatever you want to in there, but don't bring it into the public square.
That would take a change in Supreme Court opinions, because that's not the rulings. The rulings are all over the place to support religious activity in addition to beliefs in worship. By the way, I'll correct you just a little bit. The government can inhibit some activity. Not that they would do so today, but one of the very first case to interpret the First Amendment, religious freedom, upheld laws against polygamy. So, I mean, there are limits that can be imposed.
One other question here in that particular vein. Do you think that the Obama administration, and in particular Kathleen Sebelius, who promulgated the mandate, first of all, did she overstep, and did she overstep because she didn't understand what the Constitution guarantees, and she didn't understand what RFRA said?
I don't think she cared. I don't think she cared what RFRA said. This administration does not seem to care what really many of the laws say. Again, it's not a constitutional issue. RFRA is at stake here. Oh, by the way, people, if they wonder, this case now has the name of Burwell versus Hobby Lobby. That's because Sebelius is no longer head of HHS. It's hard for me to get in her head and answer that question, but I doubt she even thought about it.
Did she overstep?
Oh, sure. All she's doing is thinking about this heretofore unknown concept. There's a right to free stuff. There's not. You know, there's no right to roof over your head. There's no right to food. There isn't. Constitutional right, anyway. There's a right to pursue all of that. But think about it. Have you ever known anyone to suggest there's a right to free stuff in the Constitution before this? Not me. Never heard of it.
Herman is listening in Illinois. Let's take that call before we move on here. Herman, yeah. Welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thank you. Mr. Armstrong, ask you a question. Do you see it ever coming about that the government would prosecute a clergyman if they refused to do a homosexual couple's wedding on the basis that that clergyman would say, it's not in my beliefs to do that? Is that clergyman's right going to be sustained?
Herman, thank you very much for the call. What do you say, Ted?
Well, of course, it's a great question, and that's our fear. And by the way, my first response to those people that want to tear down the wall of separation need to rethink that. We don't want government in our pulpits. There should be a degree of separation. It all depends on how you define it. I'm not concerned that the court would ever honor that. I am concerned that this administration might pursue it. If they do, and it's held against pastors, there are going to be a lot of pastors going to jail because most everyone I know with fundamental biblical principles would not accede to that mandate. I don't think it's a very serious threat, although nothing would surprise me much anymore.
10 minutes left for your questions and comments about the Supreme Court's HHS contraception mandate and an opportunity to win the book, It's Okay to Say God, Prelude to a Constitutional Renaissance. 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MY-I-E. Talk back at issuesetc.org or facebook.com/issuesetc.
Leave it to the Lutheran Church to want all the discarded crap from evangelicalism and evangelical worship, jumping on that boat at the moment evangelicals are leaving it.
Craig Parton, speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And it's my generation, the baby boomer generation, that frankly needs to die to leave all these entertainment orientation, market orientation, me orientation. What can the church do for me today? That kind of perspective in the Lutheran churches, which is really needs to be extirpated in some way.
You can listen to Craig Parton's presentation, Making the Case Against Lutherans Imitating Evangelicals, on an audio DVD from the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. We'll send it to you for a donation of $300. For more information, look for the DVD logo at issuesetc.org.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Steadfast Lutherans. People who believe the law condemns everyone and should be preached to the fullest. People who believe the gospel is for everyone and should be preached to its sweetest. Traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice deliver every Sunday this law and gospel, that Christ was crucified for us sinners. To all who received him, who believed in his name, the Gospel of John says, he gave the right to become children of God. To see how Steadfast Lutherans preserves this good news for everyone, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Here are two new ways to stay connected to Issues Etc., Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at issuesetc. Social networking for the thinking Christian, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking with Tad Armstrong about the Supreme Court's ruling on the Health and Human Services contraception mandate. He's an attorney in Edwardsville, Illinois, founder of ELL Constitution Clubs, contributor to the documentary The Intersection of Church and State, and he's author of the book It's Okay to Say God, Prelude to a Constitutional Renaissance. You can find links to ELL Constitution Clubs and to the book It's Okay to Say God at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. You wanted to say something about Dick Durbin's response to all of this.
Yeah, there's a little humor in some of this, if you look for it hard enough. Dick Durbin's response to something he doesn't like is always to pass a law. And the funny thing about his response is, boy, I tell you what, he's going to show these Hobby Lobby folks. He's going to pass a law that makes them and similar closely held corporations of faith, he's going to make them make it public knowledge to all people applying for a job that, in effect, they're not willing to supply the gun to kill babies. Like they haven't already made that statement pretty well known throughout the world. They will be happy to let their employees know that they are they have religious principle, and that is one of them. So bring it on, Dick.
So in other words, he's saying, wow, kind of saying, look, I'm going to show you, you're going to have the deuce of a time trying to hire anybody. No one will want to work for you.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to have to let people know what you believe, like they haven't already done that. It's hilarious.
What does that response tell you there?
It tells me that all he cares about, he thinks, I hope this is not true. He believes that will get him votes, and that's the only reason he's suggesting something like this. First of all, it applies to very, very, very few people, with all the exemptions the president signed into law. It's just amazing to me.
What do you make of the angry, we could even say, in some cases, hateful response to the Hobby Lobby decision on Monday?
Oh, my gosh, it's beyond hateful. It's just venomous. I mean, these people that... And people that probably you know, friends of yours, on this side of the issue, you can just see the steam coming from their ears. Part of it is they don't understand it, I believe. But the other part of it is really just sad because, you take the gentleman's call about pastors being maybe forced to marry gay folks. They don't hate them. They don't hate gay folks. We don't hate people that believe in abortion, but we have our own beliefs and why they can't accept the fact that in a free country, there are people that don't believe the way they do without being so hateful about it is hard to understand. I know one thing, we will not hate them back. Christians will not hate them back in response to their hate. But we used to have a day in this country. Voltaire said this, and he was French, but we adopted his ideas when he said, I may not like what you say, but I'll defend to the death your right to say it. That's what we as Americans have adopted with all of our freedoms. And we used to be a country that where we may not agree with our neighbor in their belief system, but we will accept their right to believe it and act upon it. And I don't know. I think I'd like to be optimistic here and conclude the hate issue this way. I believe that the media has an agenda driven by their own agenda. And when you couple that with a handful of hate mongers, it appears as though there's an army of folks that don't care about freedom. I'd like to think that's not true if you were to address all of our citizenry. If it is, then we've forgotten what freedom's about.
I was speaking recently with Terry Mattingly of the Council on Christian Colleges and Universities, a regular guest on the program, and he said something with regard to the HHS mandate that I found rather interesting. He said the question that this has raised, not before the court, but generally in American society, is does religious liberty, in a general sense, extend even to religious conservatives? No one's arguing about the moral compunctions of religious liberals who say, go ahead, abortion is fine. Yeah, right. No one is arguing about that. It's right. Only those who say, no, this is murder. Does religious liberty extend? Will it continue to extend even to religious conservatives? What do you think about that way of framing the question?
Well, it will if we continue to abide by the rule of law. Let's take this off of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act for a moment and go back to the Bill of Rights. How do we get in this mess? A lot of people will say that our Constitution is outdated and doesn't serve a very good purpose anymore, and I would respond to them that we're in this mess because we have not abided by the Constitution. That is our problem. When you don't have a rule of law originally voted in by the people, then you have the rule of man, and that will only lead to tyranny, because eventually all they will do is seek power. That will destroy freedom. It's that simple.
How important was Monday's decision?
Oh, I think it was, top three or four decisions probably ever in my estimation.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. When you've got a government in the land of the free that could otherwise make you either go out of business effectively or provide something to kill babies against your religious beliefs, that's not America. That is not America. That's why it's so important.
Do you think that, let's say the court remains comprised in this, it keeps the same complexion, do you think they're going to have to entertain this question again for other groups?
Oh, sure. There will no doubt be a corporation challenge this. It's probably pending. There's at least 60 more cases pending that have a different nuance here or there. Although I did hear the other day what was it? The court basically has put a lot of those appeals out of business with this case and entered an order to that effect. I don't remember the details on that. But sure, there will be additional challenges, just like there is to any Supreme Court decision that comes along. And they will be addressed just exactly like this court has addressed them by going down the terms of the act.
With only a minute here, someone says, what was that case really about, and what did the Supreme Court say on Monday? How would you put it in 1 minute, Ted?
Yeah, it was about freedom. It really had nothing to do with contraception and everything to do with freedom. And that's why there's no American should not like this outcome if they value freedom. It's amazing to me that anyone does, because nobody will be negatively affected by this outcome. Nobody.
Dave in Michigan, if you would send us your mailing address, talkback@issuesetc.org, we will send you the book, It's Okay to Say God. Tad Armstrong is an attorney in Edwardsville, Illinois, founder of ELL Constitution Clubs, contributor to the documentary The Intersection of Church and State, and author of the book, It's Okay to Say God, Prelude to a Constitutional Renaissance. You can purchase It's Okay to Say God under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Tad, thank you very much for being our guest.
I just loved it. Thank you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to talk with syndicated columnist Terry Mattingly about media coverage of the Supreme Court's ruling on the HHS mandate. We'll also talk with Pastor Jordan McKinley. We'll be speaking with him about fathers teaching their children the small catechism. And we'll continue our series on preaching with Dr. Ed Gremenstein, talking about Martin Luther, the 16th century reformer, on preaching. He regarded himself as a preacher first and foremost, and we'll see what that meant to the 16th century reformer with Dr. Ed Gremenstein tomorrow on Issues Etc. Monday on the program, we'll have Pastor Tom Baker lead us in a Sunday school lesson on the prophet Jonah. That's Monday on Issues Etc. Look, our liberty is valuable. It's a thing that has been considered worth giving one's life for, not only for one's own liberty, but for the liberty of our fellow Americans. Those who love liberty, and look, all Americans really do. They just don't all understand it exactly the same way, unfortunately. Those who love liberty always want to see it extended, even to those with whom they disagree. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you Monday. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Bethany Lutheran College is pleased to sponsor Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio. Bethany Lutheran College is located in the picturesque river town of Mankato, Minnesota, and is committed to making Christian higher education affordable for all with generous financial aid packages available. At Bethany, you'll find stimulating academic programs, a friendly atmosphere, and opportunities to grow both in intellect and in your faith, all within the framework of a supportive Christian environment. For more information, visit us on the web at blc.edu.
What makes Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church in Freeburg, Illinois so special? Our new members talk about the family atmosphere, the welcoming people, and the outstanding music. But most importantly, you'll be confronted with your sin and comforted with the assurance that Jesus has removed that sin so that you can live each day as His baptized and forgiven child. Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church is at 612 North State Street in Freeburg, Illinois. Sunday worship is at 9 a.m., Sunday school and Bible classes at 10:20 a.m. Call 618-539-5664.